The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Eric Metaxas Show. In a moment, I'm talking to Maura Moynihan, the daughter of former Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. We're talking about the Tiananmen massacre, and we're talking about what China is doing to its own people and around the world. It's interesting that right now I'm talking to Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center, because Bob Woodson, you know, in 1965, it was Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, a principled liberal Democrat from New York, who talked about the breakdown of the black families and how this was at the root of things. And he was effectively told to shut up. And that's a long time ago. That's 55 years ago. And we seem to have been stuck in telling people, don't talk about that. It's kind of an amazing thing. You are still talking about it.
Yeah. What is interesting, as one of our scholars in 1776 looked at some research that at the end of slavery, there were six major plantations that had thousands of slaves. They looked at the family composition of those freed slaves. 75% had a man and a woman raising children at the end of slavery. Even in the institution of slavery, we did it. And we accomplished some amazing things in the face of oppression. There was only 25% of blacks who were literate, and less than 50 years, that number was 75% were literate. And so there are all kinds of examples that challenge the notion on the other side that somehow the problems facing Black America today are related directly to the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow. It's just a lie. And so we're going to be presenting evidence to the contrary. For instance, Senator Jim Lankford, who's a good friend, was on television yesterday because this is the 100th anniversary of when the Black business sections of Greenwood, Oklahoma was burned to the ground. And Jim said this, that was 100 years ago, and the Black community never recovered from that. It is just not true. The senator from Oklahoma does not understand that the Greenwood section of Oklahoma rebuilt within 12 years. He doesn't even know this. This is why there is just an information and knowledge gap, even on the part of people who are otherwise knowledgeable. And so what we're doing at 1776 is filling in that knowledge gap to so that Americans can understand slavery and discrimination never permanently scarred Black Americans, nor can we attribute the failures and challenges that we have today to that legacy. That's an important narrative, Eric, that we must address. Because America, with all of its faults, what defines it is the beauty of its promise. And that's what we're fighting to. But people need to know that. Young Blacks need to know that our history is not from the plantation to the ghetto to welfare. That we had a rich tradition of business ownership and whatnot. And so this is what the message that we have to get out.
You are getting it out, Bob, and I'm so glad that Tucker Carlson had you on the other day, and I hope he has you on again and again, and that others will have you on, because you're one of the very, very few voices of reason in the midst of this, in the midst of this madness. What we're seeing, as you said earlier, is anarchists, people who hate America and who could not care less about the plight of blacks, are piggybacking on what was legitimate grievance at a horrible murder, a tragedy. They're piggybacking on that that is as cynical, as nihilistic as it gets to say, you know what? There's some crowds out there. Let's just get in those crowds. And it's an opportunity to loot, to steal, to smash, to burn. And by the way, we'll get away with it because of white guilt, because of crazy laws. You know that in New York City, this mayor, who must be a madman, we have a law now that if you smash a window and go in and steal, you will be out the next day. They will not hold you. And so everyone who's been arrested, these cops are arresting and arresting. Everybody that they put in gets right out. It really is bizarre. It's beyond words. I can't imagine in America we've come to that point.
No, I totally agree with you. And it's a very dangerous point. But again, if some of these young people are being taught by the 1619 Project that America is incurably racist and that capitalism is to be despised because it's crippling and oppressive to people, this is the messages that young people are learning in our schools. But those of us who believe in the values of this nation, our pushback cannot be just writing papers or complaining about what they're doing. We must get on the ground. We must invest in those neighborhood leaders who are fighting to protect their communities, the small ethnic enclaves that are building businesses. If Zuckerberg is putting money into funding anarchists, then we need to be funding people who are rebuilding and restoring and redeeming themselves and their community. There has to be a counter investment, because right now, people of goodwill are insurgents in America. We must support this insurgency. That's how we won the Second World War. It wasn't just the troops coming from outside. It was supporting the forces within those countries that made our efforts successful. We need to supply them. They need support.
Well, that's that's an understatement. I guess I just have to remark finally on, I was amazed how the other day a church was burned across the street from the White House. The president walked out there really to show his solidarity with the church. He held up a Bible. And I thought to myself, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody says things they shouldn't. Everybody doesn't say things they should. But the attack on him for holding up a Bible, I just thought, what world are we in right now that even that is giving people a week's worth of ammunition to throw at him? I throw up my hands and then I just pray.
No, I know we've become so cynical, but I am hopeful. I just think that God sometimes uses very oppressive circumstance so that he can shine his light through our actions. And I really believe that. And that's what we're hoping. I'm hopeful because I really believe in this nation, and I believe in my grassroots leaders who are fighting the good fight. Again, Eric, but those insurgent leaders need help. They need support. We're in a crisis. But the answers I can give you, there's models that I'm going to be talking about, how grassroots leaders in 1983 in Philadelphia helped that city come back from a citywide attack by small gangs all over. In one day, they were able to come in and quell that. And I'm going to be citing that as an example of how we can do apply that strategy in today's environment. It has been done before.
Did you say that you're going to be on Mark Levin's radio program today?
No, I'm going to be on his television show on Sunday.
Even better.
Yes.
Oh, Bob, praise Jesus. Come on. That's fantastic.
I was on before, and Mark has invited me back.
That is so wonderful. I have to say, that really thrills me because a lot of people, you know, his show is one of the few shows where there's a real conversation, you know.
Right.
And he really has a conversation with people. But you said that's this Sunday.
Yes.
And so everybody who is listening to this right now, I hope they will tune in to Mark Levin.
8 o'clock on Sunday.
8 o'clock. And that is just fantastic. My friend, God bless you. thank you. We love you. And we want as many people as listening who can to support you and to support the Woodson Center. And when we come back, we're talking to Maura Moynihan about China. Bob Woodson, thank you, my friend. Folks, just, you know, if you're just tuning in, as you know, communism is something my parents raised me to hate because they knew the evil. My mother grew up in East Germany. My father saw the war with the communists in Greece in the early 50s. And many Americans do not get it. And many Americans are parroting the propaganda coming out of communist China today. And when I discovered that an old friend, somebody I haven't spoken to in 3 decades, is on this, I said, I have got to get her on the program to talk about it. So Maura Moynihan, old friend, dear friend, welcome to the program and thanks for being on this issue.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Eric, and it's wonderful to be connected with you again, especially at this time when we're at war with communist China, or shall I say, they've declared war on us.
Well, I've watched your some of your videos where you talked about how you got involved in this. And it's usually when someone experiences something, you know, most Americans will never see the horror of communism. You saw it with your own eyes. So let's go back. You know, your father was the great senator from New York, Daniel Patrick Moynihan. And as a result of your father doing what he did, you got to see something. So let's just start there, how this issue became personal for you, Maura.
I went to high school in New Delhi, India, in the early 70s, when my late father, Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, was appointed a U.S. ambassador to India by President Richard Nixon. And I had been in India only about 3 weeks. I was 15 years old. And I was invited on a school trip to Kulu Manali, which is by the Tibetan border. And as we drove in vans from New Delhi up to the Himalayan foothills, I saw hundreds of Tibetan refugees working in road gangs, building what is now the Kangra Highway. And I asked my Indian hosts, what are all these Tibetans doing here? And they said China invaded their country. And in 1959, they escaped with His Holiness Dalai Lama, who lives in Dharamshala in northern India, and they're refugees here. And I thought, this is very strange. How come we've never heard of this? And we get to Kulu Manali. There's a very ancient pass called the Rotang Pass that for centuries connected Tibet and India, where it was the salt trade, where the Tibetans would bring salt and they'd trade for silk and spices and back and forth. And it was, all these passes have been since 1959 sealed by People's Liberation Army soldiers. And there's clutching bayonets, the five-pointed star, and there were Indian soldiers further down. And the Tibetan guide that was with us said, okay, now you've seen it, we've got to go. And so this stayed very much fixed in my mind. And there were Tibetans in my school, the American International School in New Delhi. And from them, I learned the story of the Chinese communist occupation I'd inflicted on the Tibetan people, how 6,000 Buddhist monasteries were looted and burnt to the ground, repositories, 1,000 years of a great Buddhist civilization gone, destroyed. And it was only about 250,000 Tibetan refugees that managed to escape, very, very few, with the Dalai Lama. And he almost died just at the edge of the Indian border. I got involved. And I have followed this issue my whole life and worked on it my whole life. And I've watched in despair as America has just appeased and accommodated the Chinese Communist Party, particularly American elites. And my own party, the Democrats, are very much to blame. Very much to blame.
Your father, one of the reasons I often say this, I'm mostly conservative, but I have many, many times referenced your father as someone on the other side who was willing to think independently and go where the facts led. And he obviously trained you to do the same. When you see evil, you have to confront it. You were referring to Hillary Clinton and Rachel Maddow a moment ago, or Maddow, whatever. What is going on there? Because I cannot really bear to watch Rachel Maddow anymore. What is happening with regard to them and China?
Well, Rachel Maddow has been having almost every night since this dreadful pandemic overwhelmed our country. She's had Chinese communist propagandists on, most of them Americans, not of Chinese origin, attacking the United States and praising communist China. And I've been writing about this consistently and watching, and she's also using Chinese communist code words. But she reached a new low last night having Hillary Clinton on the show. And Hillary Clinton came out and said, wouldn't it be great for the Chinese communists to interfere in our elections and to get involved? And that is exactly what's happening with Antifa. There was a video that has been playing on Twitter and other social media sites again and again, which I saw, where a lot of the vandals who lit fire to St. John's Church in Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C., across from the White House, were speaking in Mandarin very clearly. And this was verified by Mandarin speakers that we work with.
Maura, has anyone in the media anywhere covered this? Because that's a staggering thing, what you just said.
Yes, it is staggering, but it's only being covered by what I guess you'd say, you know, like right-wing media, conservative media, certainly not one mention of it. I mean, I watch mainstream corporate media every night, and I've been shocked how there has been no mention of Hong Kong last week, not one. PBS NewsHour towards the end last Friday, a little bit of a mention of the security law, but it's extremely fishy timing that the tragic death of George Floyd has exploded into a national race riot and race war practically just this week, which is the 31st anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, just when Beijing is implementing this new security law in Hong Kong. It's wiped Hong Kong off the front page. It's not that the New York Times was reporting on Hong Kong, because let's not forget, the New York Times has 4 years published full page color ads from the Chinese Communist Party, from China Daily, with no shame. And as long as they do that, their reporting is biased, and it's always going to tilt in favor of China while they shoved this false, completely absurd Russiagate narrative down people's throats.
Well, I have to say that, you know, when it comes to China, you mentioned Nixon earlier, it was another universe, right? When Russia was the enemy, and Nixon and Kissinger very cleverly said, let's use China. But what happened in the 90s when Bill Clinton, in effect, it's a combination of what I think of as a kind of liberal naivete with regard to communism and evil with conservative worship of the free market. In other words, imagining that the free market by itself will bring religious liberty and other kinds of liberty. And so a combination of greed and naivete opened China up and made them rich and powerful. And we have not, until this president, had anyone willing in the White House to take this on. That to me is just a scandal in and of itself.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I can remember in the Reagan years, sort of the mantra was Coca-Cola will bring democracy. Well, that didn't happen now, did it? And I got arrested in 1994 in front of the Chinese embassy in Washington to protest Bill Clinton giving communist China permanent normal trading relations. With one stroke of the executive pen, President Clinton removed the sanctions that had been put on communist China after the Tiananmen Square massacre. which were working. And had that not happened, we might have seen a different China evolve. And then as he was leaving the White House, he got China into the World Trade Organization. And it was hailed again by left and right, just as you said, you know, on the right, it's, oh, you know, 2 billion consumer, you know all these consumer, 2 billion pairs of shoes. You know, and on the left, again, an incredible naivete. And, you know, why did we fight the Cold War? When the Soviet Union was communist, we wanted to have a thermonuclear war with them. China's communist, and we've sent them all of our factories to the great detriment of the American working people. And it is true that the Trump administration is the first in my lifetime that has ever, ever been tough on China. And when I saw Hillary Clinton last night with Rachel Maddow cheering her on, saying, let's get communist China involved in disrupting our elections, I was shocked. But Comcast, which owns NBC, has cut major, major broadcasting deals with the Chinese Communist Party. So that's why Rachel Maddow is allowed to do this.
Well, it's an extraordinary thing because you said, you know, you're a Bernie supporter, or were a Bernie supporter when he was in the running. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Rachel Maddow would be. Oh, we're going to go to a break. Folks, we'll be right back. More with Maura Moynihan. Don't go away.
Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com.
The preacher talked to me and he smiled, said, come and walk with me, come and walk one more mile.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Maura Moynihan about China and the Communist Party of China and how we in this country are only just now beginning to wake up to the horror of that Communist Party and what they're doing around the world. Maura, you were mentioning earlier how the news really seems to look the other way. In other words, to my mind, we ought to be doing everything we possibly can to support the freedom movement in Hong Kong. The president has said some good things, but it does seem like suddenly the focus is on all these riots happening around this country. And the Chinese have been mocking us. The Chinese premier was mocking America the other day, and in a sense saying, we've got problems, you know, why are we bothering them?
Well, the Chinese Communist Party is delighting in the riots and the vandalism in America. The Global Times, which is for the Chinese Communist Party, has been saying, isn't it a glorious sight to see America on fire? And when the coronavirus first overwhelmed the United States in March, a top People's Liberation Army general from the Chinese Communist Party said, infected with the virus, go ahead and die, America. These are our trusted global partners, the communist Chinese. And while they are making these statements in broad daylight, with no shame, in fact, they want us to get the message, the Asian Society of New York published an open letter with a lot of the members of the Committee of 100, again, a group of American diplomats, business leaders, former senators, like Max Baucus, Madeleine Albright. America has to look to its own shortcomings and work with China because China controls our medical supply. And this is no time to be tough on China, no time for tariffs. Last year, a year ago, at 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, the Committee of 100 read an open letter to President Trump and the American people that was published by The Washington Post, another collaborator that prints China Daily ads every week. Just see where the money's coming from, saying no tariffs on China. This is a bad policy. We need to keep it all open. So which side are they on? It's pretty not on the side of the American people or the Hong Kong protesters or the Chinese people.
Well, it's a funny thing. I often talk about the idea that we in America have been so blessed with liberty and wealth that we've lost sight of how beautiful it is, how fragile it is, how precious it is, and how we need to guard it and proclaim it around the world. And so when you see protesters in Hong Kong getting that more than we do, I mean, when we have leaders of the NBA and Nike and NBA coaches saying things that reveal a level of ignorance about what it is to be an American and what people have fought and died for so that we can be free. It's just a very grievous moment in America. And I just wonder if some Americans are beginning to wake up to this. It doesn't sound like Rachel Maddow is.
Well, Rachel Maddow is part of the elite. And so she's paid and rewarded to say these things. But last week, a new Pew Rasmussen poll showed that 9 out of 10 Americans have a negative perception of the Chinese government. So there's this real disconnect between the elites who have, as you know, tremendous power in our society. Like, I am so disgusted by the coverage from the New York Times. Now, Chris Buckley and Ed Wong have done tremendous reporting on China, in China. But the editorial page and the op-ed page has pro-Chinese stuff every single day. It's shocking. Again, which side are you on? I guess, you know, those full page color ads from Xinhua and China Daily buy silence and complicity, don't they? But we're heading for a very, very dangerous confrontation with China. It's very clear to me that China's going to start a war in Asia very, very soon. They're already being extremely provocative on what was the Tibet-Indian border. That is now the China-Indian border. And again, you won't read about this in the New York Times, and it's never on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, ever, ever, ever. And that is one of the longest, most militarized borders in the whole world, the China-Tibet-India border. And PLA troops have the high ground. Genghis Khan said, he who controls Tibet controls the world.
I just have to say that it's extraordinary to me that, you know, you who are the daughter of such a prominent senator and thinker that your father was, that you've come at this point in your life effectively to be opposing most of the Democratic Party. It's kind of a bizarre thing that has happened, not just in your life, but I mean, just in general, globally, that that you would think that the Democrats could at least be counted on to care about human rights. You would think that you could count on them for that. And what's going on with the Uyghur Muslims and the Falun Gong, and of course with millions of Christians, it is something that you would think that Democrats would care about that. So that to me is the most horrifying, is what has happened to the party.
Oh, I agree with you, Eric. Absolutely. And the Democrats are selective about what issues they get hot and bothered about and what issues they're going to take up. They get very exercised about, like, you know, a journalist is arrested in Ethiopia or, you know, in the Congo. And what? Yes, of course, we should care about human rights abuses everywhere. But when it comes to communist China, they're dead silent about the millions of people in China's concentration camp system, about the $1 billion forced organ harvesting industry that China runs.
Actually, Maura, hang on 1 second. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk about that specifically.
Okay.
Folks, don't go away.
Big star out of me.
We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally. Well, I'll bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar.
I'd rather have Jesus than see.
Folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. I find it funny, Maura Moynihan, that, you know, when I knew you in the 80s, you know, I was a liberal Democrat. And something happened to me at some point where I realized that they're not standing up for the things that I believe in. The party has changed very dramatically. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking now, you just referenced in the earlier segment, organ harvesting. In other words, the United States of America has had, roughly speaking, a biblical view of the human person, that we treat people with dignity. We treat prisoners with dignity. When we don't, we repent. We prosecute people who abuse prisoners. We prosecute cops who murder men, whether they're black or white. We try to do the right thing. So when you hear about a country like China that has a completely different view, they have a worldview no different than the Nazis did, that
yes,
human beings can be used as we like. There's nothing sacred or dignified about them. So tell us about the organ harvesting, because this just stops my heart when I hear about this.
Yes, and you don't read about this in the New York Times or hear about it on Rachel Maddow's show, do you? It is a multi-billion dollar industry, and I urge all of your viewers to read about the work of my friend and hero, Ethan Guttman, who wrote a book some years back called The Slaughter, all about forced organ harvesting, and I'm sure he'd be a wonderful guest on your show, Eric. And he just did a very daring series of field research missions where he got more information from Uyghurs. The Uyghur people, the Tibetan people, and the Falun Gong are the preferred bodies for forced organ harvesting, which means a live human being is strapped down to a table with no anesthetic, and the organ is ripped out of their body while they're alive, because then it's fresher and it's better. And there are places in China, the Uyghur people are located, where there's a special immigration line for people coming in for organs. And this has gone on for years. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. But here's the part that I find so outrageous. When in the Soviet Union, in America, we knew that Soviet psychiatrists were using dissidents in Soviet medical hospitals and psychiatric hospitals to torture them and punish them. So we didn't collaborate them. But the American Medical Association is collaborating with transplant doctors from China, who are butchers, essentially, who take organs right out of living human beings. We publish papers with them. They're invited for conferences. Ethan has documented all of this. You want an eye, you want an eye, you want a liver, you want a heart, you want a kidney. And where's the outrage? Where's the outrage?
I have to tell you, I would prefer to look the other way because it's so horrible, but I won't. By God's grace, we'll stay on this kind of stuff because we have to. We know that if we were in the position of the people living in communist China, we would want someone out there in the West to be a voice for us who are voiceless. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm so grateful to discover you again recently, Maura, and that you're so on top of this. Now, if people want to find you, do you have a blog? I was reading your blog. Where can people find you?
Well, I don't really have a blog going yet, but I have a website, Maura Moynihan in 1957. And I'm on Twitter, Maura Moynihan 1. And I write for the Asian Age, and I'm working on a new article for them that should be out by the end of this week about how I was very, very suspicious that there were agitators burning St. John's Church who were caught on camera speaking Mandarin.
What would the theory be? How would they be? I mean, we know that Antifa has infiltrated whole thing, but the idea that the Chinese would be involved seems another level of conspiracy theory it's too horrifying to contemplate. How would that work? Or do we know? I don't know.
That makes absolute sense. If you just all you have to do is start reading your listeners. I encourage you to do what I've been doing my whole life, which is just go to the source. Just read Chinese Communist Party propaganda. Just go on their website, Xinhua Global Times, and read what they say about America. I worked for many years for Radio Free Asia. I was the Radio Free Asia Tibet Service Bureau Chief in Kathmandu, Nepal for 5 years. And the reason Tibet is the best lens through which to observe the Chinese Communist Party is twofold. One, the Dalai Lama is the face of resistance because he escaped. He got out. So the fact that he lives in exile in India, he's now been there 61 years and must thank the Indian government for the protection and security they provide to him. So, you know, why can't he go home? What's wrong? What's going on in Tibet? For one, for two, Tibet is almost one third of Communist China's land mass. And it is the source of the nine great rivers of Asia, all the mineral deposits, lithium for your cell phones, uranium for their nuclear project. All of these things are in Tibet. It's called traditional Chinese lore, Tibet and Xinjiang. So interestingly, when China starts the Korean War, it annexed Tibet and Xinjiang in 1950 and 1951 at exactly the same time, so nobody noticed. They doubled their landmass. And when the Cuban Missile Crisis was going on in 1962, that's when they invaded India in the India-China-Tibet War. I add Tibet to it. So it is not surprising at all that they would take advantage of this tragedy of the death of that occurred with police brutality just last week and inflame it just as Tiananmen anniversary week comes up. And the Epoch Times, which I write for often, has a very, very good expose where Antifa comes out and says, we are committed to a communist insurrection in America. They come right and they say it on their literature. And they, when I was working for Radio Free Asia in 2000, we got a document leaked out of Beijing that said, we are going to destroy America from within thanks to Bill Clinton. He got us into the World Trade Organization. He removed the sanctions, the Human Rights Annual Review. So we don't need to have a conventional war. We can do it from within with espionage, with, you know, stealing intellectual property, co-opting elites. And they've done all of that by the book. By the way, in all of our years, we Tibet people, we have never once been proven wrong about communist China, but no one will listen to us. We've been completely blackballed. I can't get booked on MSNBC or CNN. I have friends who work there as producers. They've all said to me, I'm sorry, Maura, you're a Tibet person and our board members won't like that.
Whoa, but Maura.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maura, hold on. We're going to go to another break. We've got a final segment coming up with Maura Moynihan, and we will have her back in the weeks ahead. Folks, this is an important subject. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Maura Moynihan. Maura, we need to repeat, I hope I said it earlier in the program, that this is the anniversary of Tiananmen Square.
Yes.
This is the 31st anniversary of the bloodbath where mm-hmm. the communist monsters mm-hmm. murdered innocent students who mm-hmm. dared to stand up. And we mm-hmm. need to mark that. It's one of the reasons that I'm having you on today, because mm-hmm. somebody needs to acknowledge it.
Well, absolutely. And this is the first time in 30 years that the people of Hong Kong have been denied permission to have their annual rally in support of the Tiananmen movement. And I predict that there's going to be a great deal of violence in the next 24 hours in Hong Kong. And conveniently for the Chinese Communist Party, all the rioting and the vandalism in America has wiped this story off the
right front
of the news, and no one is talking about it. But you can find it on you know, social media. And we're going to have a prayer vigil tomorrow that I'm involved with, a lot of us, in the afternoon. And there will be a gathering on the steps of the United States Capitol But it is very important to remember that the Tiananmen Square massacre occurred right after my hero, Mikhail Gorbachev, allowed the peaceful dissolution of the Soviet Union. And he came to Beijing. And we were all very hopeful at that moment that maybe the communist system in China could also be dismantled. But no, they doubled down and they were rewarded by the United States. First by George H.W. Bush, who sent Brent Scowcroft to assure Deng Xiaoping, don't worry, we're going to gloss this over. And then China signed a deal with Hill and Knowlton, the PR firm in Midtown Manhattan, to do cleanup and PR. And then Bill Clinton in 1994 removes the sanctions that people like my father, the senators who cared, had put on the Chinese Communist Party for an annual human rights review before trade deals could be approved. And once that was gone, they realized they could kill and torture with impunity. And now America has blood on its hands because it's helped build a monster. And now that monster is coming for us.
Isn't that the way it works? Because we've been out of touch for such a long time, you don't know that I wrote a book about William Wilberforce, the man who led the battle against the slave trade in the British Empire.
Yes.
And I remember when I was writing that book about 12 years ago, thinking, you know, what would we do? In other words, if somebody says, hey, you can make a lot of money if you work with the slave traders or if you deal with them. Or you don't have to deal with them directly. They have sugar plantations, huge sugar plantations in the West Indies. You can make a lot of money. That was bolstering the British economy.
Yeah.
And they took a moral stand against it and at great cost to themselves abolished the slave trade in 1807 thanks to Wilberforce. And today we have something similar. We have slave labor and horrible human rights abuses, and we have American companies profiting tremendously, looking the other way. You just mentioned it. It's whether it's the New York Times or the Washington Post or Nike or the NBA. I want to continue this conversation with you, Maura. Just a final word before we go.
I think I commend you for writing about William Wilberforce. He was always a hero of mine because I always likened the Tibet movement to the abolitionists because we're very small in number and we're committed to nonviolence, as were the Quakers, who were on the forefront of the abolitionist movement here. And I urge everyone who watches your show, every American, to realize that communist China is our common enemy. And the people who say that the real enemy is Russia are just swallowing propaganda, because anyone who knows anything about the world knows that Russia does not want a war with America. They want trade. And they don't come out and say it, but communist China does. And when you see a China Daily News box in your neighborhood, do what I do. Pour red blood paint over it or kick it over, because it's poisonous propaganda.
I like the cut of your jib, Maura Moynihan, but I always did. Honestly, I am just thrilled to see you have this kind of passion. We're out of time, but we will talk to you in the weeks ahead. Thank you. God bless you for all you're doing. Thank you so much for being on this program.
And free China. Free China.